It's Wednesday, February 25th, and welcome to Higher IQ. Last night was the State of the Union. Today is not a political episode. We're not going to tell you who clapped, who boycotted, or what any of it means for the midterms. But we are going to do something we love. Take a claim that sounds good and ask what the calculator actually says. Today we're looking at why your kid's dim bedroom might be the real screen time threat. Why those new baby bonds don't actually add up the way the speech suggested, and a Stanford breakthrough that could make your annual flu shot feel like a flip phone. Three stories. One theme, conventional wisdom that doesn't survive contact with arithmetic. Here's a number that should stop you, 90%. That's the share of young adults in parts of East Asia who are now nearsighted. In the United States and Europe, it's approaching 50%. A few generations ago, it was closer to 20. Something changed, and for years, we've had a simple story. Screens did it. Phones, tablets, computers, all that close-up staring is ruining our eyes. New research suggests we got it wrong, or at least, we got it incomplete. Scientists at the SUNY College of Optometry published a study last week in Cell Reports proposing a different mechanism. The problem isn't the screen itself, it's the lighting conditions while you're looking at it. Here's what happens. When you focus on something close, a phone, a book, a tablet, your pupil constricts. Not because the light is bright, but to sharpen the image. It's called accommodation. In bright outdoor light, this doesn't matter much because there's plenty of light flooding your retina anyway. But indoors, in a dim room, that pupil constriction, combined with already low ambient light, starves your retina of the stimulation it needs, and the difference isn't subtle. A sunny day outside delivers somewhere between 10,000 and 100,000 lux of light. Your average living room? Maybe 300. Your kid's bedroom with the overhead light on? Maybe 500. We're talking about a 200-fold difference in light intensity. The retina evolved expecting sunlight. We're giving it desk lamps. The researchers call it a light starvation hypothesis. And it explains a puzzle that's haunted vision scientists for why do so many completely different interventions all seem to work. Outdoor time helps. Atropine eye drops help. Multifocal lenses help. These seem unrelated until you realize they all, in different ways, increase how much light reaches the retina or reduce excessive pupil constriction. Now, this is one study from one lab published 1 week ago. It's a hypothesis grounded in physiology, not a clinical trial proving causation. The researchers are clear about that, but the mechanism is testable, and it reframes a conversation we've been having wrong. The practical implication is simple. If your kid is going to read or scroll, turn up the lights, sit near a window, get outside. The 20-20-20 rule, look 20 feet away every 20 minutes, might matter less than just not doing close work in a dim room. Your eyes aren't straining from screens. They might be starving for light. Speaking of numbers that don't quite add up the way we assume, let's talk about something from last night's speech. And look, we don't do politics here. But when the government launches a new savings program, any government, any program, our job is to ask whether the math holds up. This one's called Trump accounts, or 530A accounts. And whether you voted red, blue, or stayed home if you've got young kids, it's worth understanding what's actually on the table. Here's how it works. Any parent can open a 530A account for a child under 18, but if your kid was born between 2025 and 2028, the government deposits $1,000 to get you started. That's the pilot program. Kids born outside that window can still have accounts, they just don't get the free seed money. The pitch from last night was simple. That $1,000 goes into an investment account, grows tax-deferred, and by the time your kid turns 18, it could be worth, quote, over $100,000 or more. Let's do the math. $1,000 invested at 7% annual returns, roughly the historical average for a broad stock index, for 18 years, with no additional contributions, becomes $3,400. That's a used 2014 Honda Civic, with 180,000 miles on it. It's a fine start, but it's not $100,000. To hit $100,000 by age 18, you'd need to contribute about $280 a month, every month, for 18 years. That's an additional $60,000 out of pocket. The seed money becomes about 3% of the final balance. The concept itself isn't new. Versions of baby bonds have been proposed by economists across the political spectrum and championed by Senator Cory Booker. The debate has never been whether kids should have savings accounts. It's about what the math actually delivers. And we have data. The UK launched child trust funds in 2005. Same idea. Every child got £250 to £500 at birth, with more added at age 7. Those accounts started maturing last year. The average balance? £2,200, roughly $2,800. Most families never contributed beyond the government's deposit. 45% of matured accounts haven't even been claimed. Now there's a sweetener. Several major employers have pledged to match the government's $1,000 contribution for employees' kids. And when your child turns 18, the account converts to a traditional IRA. So there are rules about withdrawals, but also decades more of potential tax-deferred growth if they leave it alone. Should you sign up? Yes. Free money is free money. It takes 4 minutes at trumpaccounts.gov. It's a reasonable savings vehicle. But the accounts are a tool, not a miracle. The $100,000 framing is where the math gets wishful. So we've talked about light hitting your retina and dollars hitting your savings account. Now let's talk about something hitting your immune system, and why it might work completely differently than we thought. For 230 years, vaccines have worked the same way. You take a piece of a pathogen, a weakened virus, a protein fragment, something distinctive, and you show it to the immune system. The immune system memorizes it. Later, when the real thing shows up, your body recognizes the threat and attacks. This is why we need a new flu shot every year. The virus mutates. The old wanted poster doesn't match the new criminal. It's why the CDC's childhood immunization schedule now includes 14 different vaccines for 16 diseases, each one designed, tested, and administered separately. Researchers at Stanford Medicine just published something in Science that breaks this pattern entirely. They've developed a nasal spray vaccine that doesn't target any specific pathogen. Instead, it keeps the immune system's first responders, the innate immune system, on high alert for months. Think of it this way. Traditional vaccines show the police a photo of a specific suspect. This vaccine tells the police to be suspicious of everyone for the next 3 months. In mice, a single nasal spray protected against SARS-CoV-2, other coronaviruses, staph infections, hospital-acquired bacterial pneumonia, and dust mite allergies. One spray, 5 unrelated threats, protection lasting at least 90 days. The trick was combining the innate immune system, which responds fast but usually fades in days, with signals from T cells that tell it to stay activated. Previous research ignored the innate system because it doesn't last. Stanford figured out how to extend it from days to months. Now, this was a study on mice, and as every scientist will tell you, mice are not tiny humans. If this doesn't translate to our immune systems, we're back to square one. The lead researcher estimates 5 to 7 years to availability if everything goes perfectly, and everything never goes perfectly. Some immunologists are skeptical. You can boost the innate system much beyond its natural limits. But here's why this matters beyond convenience. Think about the early months of COVID. We knew the threat, we had the genetic sequence, and we still waited over a year for vaccines to roll out at scale. That's the cost of specificity. You can't build a wanted poster until you've seen the criminal. A universal vaccine that keeps the innate system primed wouldn't need to wait. It wouldn't care what the new pathogen looked like. It would already be suspicious. Instead of 14 vaccines for 16 diseases, what if you needed 2 sprays a year? The math changes. The logistics change. The entire model of immunization changes. We've spent 2 centuries teaching the immune system to recognize specific criminals. Stanford is asking, what if we could just teach it to recognize trouble? 3 stories today. 3 cases where the conventional wisdom doesn't survive the calculator. Half the planet is going nearsighted, and we blamed screens when we should have been measuring lumens. A savings program promises compound interest will turn $1,000 into $100,000, but the math says $3,400. The rest is up to you. And for 2 centuries, we've designed vaccines one pathogen at a time, building a schedule of 14 shots, never asking whether we could just leave the immune system's front door permanently guarded. The pattern isn't that experts are wrong. It's that intuition is lazy. Screens feel like the problem. 100,000 sounds achievable. Specific vaccines seem like the only option. None of these survive 10 minutes with a pencil. That's what we're here for. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.